Hello, is this 2004 World Series of Poker main event champion Greg Fossilman Raymer?
Hello?
Hello?
This is Greg. How you doing?
Hi, Greg. How are you?
I'm all right. Can you hear me well enough?
You're a little bit muffled. It sounds like you're kind of far away, but if that's what we're working with, we'll make do.
Sorry.
It's all right. No problem. We appreciate you coming on the show. You were one of the guys that we really wanted to have on, and we're so thankful that you were able to cut out some time to come on and talk about poker and some things with us for a really great cause that we're running this charity podcast for. Just so you're aware, we're just now starting hour 20 of a 50-hour podcast. So if at some point we say something that is just that should be common sense and we slip up on it, please forgive us. We've been up a long time and have interviewed a lot of people. But we do thank you for coming on the show. It's much appreciated.
No problem at all.
You are from our neck of the woods, actually. I'm originally from Connecticut. My co-host Kevin lives in Connecticut now. And you got your start playing at the Mohegan Sun in Foxwoods, right?
Well, I wouldn't say my start. I had already been playing poker a good bit before I moved there.
Okay. Kevin, you've actually got some experience playing with Greg, right?
I do, actually. Greg, I'm sure it's, other than by face, it would be very difficult for you ever to remember me. It's obviously much easier for me to remember you. But back, actually, ever before you won the World Series, you used to play in the Tuesday night rebuy tournament at Foxwoods religiously.
Oh, and, absolutely.
I actually played heads up with you three separate times. I was actually lucky enough to beat you once, and you beat me twice in my young career. But back then, I even had a lot of respect for you, and I learned a ton from you. There used to always been a 5-5 no limit game. People don't realize back in the day, 1-2 no limit never existed. That the only game that really went was that 5-5 game, and it was like one table, and it went on Tuesday nights. Everything else was pretty much limit back in our neck of the woods. But even back then, I truly had a lot of respect for your game, and always knew enough to sit on your. Always knew enough. You're welcome. And always knew enough to sit on your left hand side and. Knew at that time that you're always going to buy in for the biggest stack on the table and put people to the test. And I think playing with you all those years truly made me a lot better player, you know, just in hindsight, learning from you at that time. So it is really a big deal, and I'm very happy to be talking to you. I was very happy for you, obviously, when you won the World Series. And, you know, in your career, obviously, you were a great ambassador for the game and went on from there. Can you give us a little, you did move out of Connecticut, and we believe you moved on to North Carolina. What was your reasoning for that? Is it just a better life for your family, or a better poker playing? I mean, what was your idea about going down there?
Yeah, poker really had nothing to do with it. After I won the main event, I'm, you know, representing Poker Stars. I'm traveling around to tournaments all the time. My wife, you know, said, look, we can live anywhere near an airport. I want less winter. And we didn't want to live in Vegas. We didn't want to raise our daughter in Vegas. We looked at LA because, you know, there's all the big poker casinos and poker tournaments there. But, you know, it was just so expensive for the housing in a safe neighborhood and the traffic and congestion. And we just eventually decided we really weren't going to enjoy living in LA. And at the time, really, for any like cash games and stuff that I would want to play, there was nowhere else to go. I mean, maybe to some extent Atlantic City would have had games that would have interested me, but we didn't want to live there. And we just ended up in Raleigh as the place we thought we would enjoy living the most.
That's great. And what is your schedule like now? I mean, how often are you getting out on the road to play? I mean, are you still considering yourself as your major career in your life now as being a full-time player? I mean, are you just being able to pick and choose what you really want to go and play?
Well, certainly I have full control. I stopped representing Poker Stars a few months before Black Friday. My contract was up for renegotiation, and we just didn't agree on new terms, so we parted ways. And so up till then, a lot of my travel was overseas, having to play like EPT, LAPT, stuff like that. Now I still spend like half the year on the road, but instead it's doing things like my Fossilman Poker Training seminars, doing stuff for the WSOP Academy, things of that sort. So I still, you know, generally don't go to a poker tournament or a tournament series just because it's a good series, but because I've got something else going on. at that location. So I'll be playing a bunch of Heartland Poker Tour events between now and the end of the year. And, you know, we've arranged for me to teach a seminar at the casino at the same time.
That's great. And talking about your training programs and things like that, where are you actually going to next that you're going to be offering one of your fossil male trainings or one of the WSOP boot camps?
I'm going to pull up my calendar to make sure I don't get anything wrong. I mean, I'm playing the next Heartland Poker Tour event in Colorado, but I won't be doing a seminar there at this time.
Okay.
The Golden Gate Casino in Blackhawk, but they're going to have another tournament series in December, and I'll be there and doing a seminar at that time. The next seminar I'm teaching is at the Lumiere Place Casino in St. Louis, and that also will be at the same time that there is a Heartland Poker Tour event, which is primarily taking place at the River City Casino, both of whom are owned by the same company. So I will be staying at Lumiere Place and teaching a seminar and then doing the HPT Heartland Poker Tour event immediately afterwards at the end of the month. So I think my seminar is on like the 26th or 27th of this month, and then the HPT event is that weekend. I'm doing kind of a mini seminar at Canterbury Park in Minneapolis right after that, the first week of October. Probably going to the Heartland Poker Tour event in Iowa, where I am actually going to that event in Iowa in the middle of October, and got other stuff coming up in November, but not nailed down enough for me to be 100% sure.
Okay, and how are you enjoying the HPT? I mean, is that something that's close to your heart? Are you actually being sponsored by them, or is that something that you feel is just good for poker at this point, a good series?
I'm not sponsored by them or anything. It's just that, you know, they have a good tournament series, and they just happen to be locations where the casino has also been interested in, you know, making the arrangements for me to come in and teach a seminar. So I've done stuff in the past at, like, WSOP circuit events and, you know, other types of tournaments. But it just really is just a question of making, you know, the arrangements with the host casino. So in this case, the next seminar at Lumiere Place, they were interested in helping make that happen. And so we were able to arrange it. And, you know, it was a good time for them to do it right before the HPT main event takes place. Because now you've got a bunch of customers that are about to play, you know, one of the biggest tournaments of the year in St. Louis, and they want to brush up on their poker skills right before they do so.
That's wonderful. And, you know, Greg, you've always been known as a very educated person, somebody who was actually way back when, and I'm not sure even to this day, but still frequent the forums a lot and always contributed in a way. We actually have an interactive chat going on at this time, and I do actually, before I ask, I have a couple questions I want to ask you. I just want to mention again, the whole reason that we're having you on and we're very grateful for having you here is that we're actually doing this whole charity for a charity called 22Q. And raising awareness and just doing our best job to raise any money we can to get help out to these kids. There's a couple questions coming in, if you don't mind, I'd like to ask you. One from one of our listeners, Vern. He actually asked, how is your feelings about poker finally being, or I'm not sorry, finally being ruled as a skill game at this point? I don't know if you've seen any of the stuff that came out of, I believe it was New York, but do you have any feelings on that at all?
Oh, yeah, we're thrilled. I mean, that was Judge Weinstein. He has been considered probably the most significant district court federal judge for the last several decades. In the federal court system, you've got the district courts, and then you have the circuit court or regional court of appeals, and then the Supreme Court. And he was a guy that was appointed to the bench, you know, in that district something like in the 50s or 60s. I mean, the guy's like almost 100 years old. But he's been considered one of the most preeminent legal scholars, you know, on the bench, basically the entire last half of this last century. And so when he wrote that 120-page opinion explaining how the Illegal Gambling Business Act just did not apply to poker because poker is a game of skill, it's not binding authority. He's a district court judge. You know, so it's not like courts in other districts or any of the circuit courts or the Supreme Court have to follow his ruling, but his reputation is so strong that it will be extremely persuasive authority that other judges are going to look at it and kind of say, if this guy says it's so, it probably is. Because even someone like me, I'm 48 years old, but when I was in law school, we were reading decisions that he wrote. And, you know, that he had wrote decades before I was in law school. So almost any active lawyer today is familiar with this judge and knows his opinions and knows how important many of his opinions have been. You know, many important cases in the Supreme Court were basically, it started with Judge Weinstein, got to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court's opinion was basically, we agree with Judge Weinstein, and we're pretty much just taking what he said when he wrote his opinion at the district court level, and we're copying it and making it our opinion here at the Supreme Court. So it's not even just, you know, some judge. It is, you know, one of the most influential judges that's ever sat on the bench in this country. So we're very hopeful that this opinion will not just, you know, be another little decision, but will actually help convince other courts as well as politicians, you know, members of Congress. You know, we're very hopeful that during the lame duck session, we'll get a lot of these members of Congress to vote yes on a federal legislation that would license and regulate online poker. And part of the ammunition is going to be, look at this judge, you know, maybe the most important living judge in America, has explained why it's a game of skill. And if he says it's a game of skill, it probably is, don't you think? And that will convince them more than having, like, me tell them that it's a game of skill.
Excellent. And now, in how are you? Are you still championing some of these causes? Are you still getting out there in these kind of things with the PPA and different things like that and trying to push some of this legislation forward?
Absolutely. I'm still on the board of directors for the Poker Players Alliance. You know, still involved. You know, we had some involvement in this case. We were providing some of the testimony. Some of the expert witnesses were people that we basically made available to, is it DeChristina, I want to say, is the person's name who was pushing this lawsuit for, you know, for all poker players. And, you know, so, in fact, I was, like, about that close to being one of the expert witnesses in the case. We ended up deciding to just basically go with the statisticians, the math professor, and give that kind of testimony rather than a poker pro himself give the testimony. But, you know, it's certainly something I still stay very active in, and I'm, you know, very passionate about convincing the country, convincing the world that poker is no different than chess, you know, or any other mental game. You know, you can have a world Sudoku championship or anything else, and while the luck of poker is more obvious, you know, you shuffle cards, sometimes the chips go in and then there's still cards to be dealt, and so you could be a big favorite and lose the hand. But just because that luck is kind of in your face, it doesn't mean that all these other games that are thought of as pure skill games don't have elements of luck. It's just that the luck is not as obvious to the person who's not an expert in the game.
Okay. Now, Greg, and I don't want to overload you, but I really have to say I have some great, great questions coming in from the chat. And the next one is, they want to ask you how your feeling is if the ruling itself can be applied, or how or if it can be applied to the UIGEA.
Well, it's not that it can be applied directly. In other words, this is a district court decision. So it really is only binding precedent if you're in that district court again. So any other federal judge who's not in that district can do whatever they want. And they can ignore this opinion if they wish to or if they choose to. You know, and the same is true for the courts of appeals and the Supreme Court. And of course, the state courts don't have to give it any weight at all. But because it's this judge, especially, because it's, you know, not just, you know, kind of a random federal district court judge, but it's the most respected district court judge, you know, for the last 50 years, people are going to look at it. So whether it's judges in state courts, judges in other federal courts, politicians at the state or federal level, they're going to tend to feel like, okay, we really have, you know, hard for us to argue that poker isn't a game of skill anymore. You know, the people that have been arguing that it isn't a game of skill, you know, well, basically they're idiots. They don't know poker at all. They know nothing about it. It would be like me trying to argue something about you know, some gamer sport I've never played. Or that I've, you know, or I could say, like, well, I've ridden a bicycle, so now I can, like, debate, you know, issues of correct strategy in a bicycle race with somebody. I mean, obviously my opinion is completely meaningless and useless on this issue because I don't have any of the experience. Just because I've ridden a bike, it's not enough. And so people that would sit there and say poker is a game of luck, it's not a game of skill, because look, the cards get dealt and anything could happen.
Greg, like,
well, they don't understand.
Greg, what's the most compelling piece of evidence that supports poker being called a game of skill?
Well, I mean, to be honest, the compelling evidence is the totality of the situation. That's really hard to make people grasp. But if I was trying to give someone a soundbite answer to convince them, I would say the best evidence is probably when you look at the records of poker games, especially online poker, because now we can get an absolutely perfect 100% record of what has taken place in real games with real people who are each individually, you know, playing for themselves, trying to do their best. We get approximately 3 out of 4 hands do not reach showdown, which means that I never get to see your cards, you never get to see my cards. And obviously that must mean that, you know, more than occasionally, the hand that was not the so-called best hand, the highest ranking hand, you know, failed to win. Because someone who had an inferior hand induced the better hand to fold. And if 3 out of 4 times you don't even have to show your cards in order to win the pot, well, then there must be the element of skill involved, because that's how the better players are winning, is they're able to win more than their fair share of these situations. And of course there's much, much more to it than that, but it's not as if this is like, you know, playing roulette. You put your money out, you spin the ball, the random element, and then you just see, do I win or lose? You know, there's no hidden information. There's no way to apply any skills whatsoever. I mean, I don't know. I guess it's kind of hard. It's one of those things that's just like, I don't even understand how people can argue that it isn't a game of skill.
Well, Greg, thank you for being so knowledgeable about this, and this is definitely some very great content. A couple other questions came through, and sure. One of them actually was that you've always been known to be a very competent mixed game player, and we know that you're traveling around to a lot of tournament scenes, so you might not be able to play them as often anymore, but we know back from PokerStars you played a ton of Triple Draw, and there's been comments about you playing a lot of Badoogie, Badesi, and Badoosi. Do you happen to play any of those games often anymore?
Well, I just don't get the opportunity. Like, I'm here right now in Thackerville, Oklahoma, at the Windstar Casino, where I host their tournament series, The River. And it's a great series of tournaments. It's a great casino. It's a great poker room. But we have been unable to convince the Gaming Commission to let us play anything other than Hold'em in Omaha. So, I mean, I'm here for 3 weeks, but I can only play Hold'em in Omaha. Can't play Triple Draw, no matter if there were 1,000 people who wanted to play. It's just not on the list of approved games.
Not even stud, and Greg?
They don't even, no, not even stud. The Gaming Commission for this casino has only permitted Hold'em in Omaha. So, you know, it's you know, one of the few things that is less than perfect about this location. I mean, I really like coming here. I like the people. You know, I like almost everything about it, except when I play cash games here, it's pretty much just PLO that I play, because we cannot start, like, a Triple Draw game or, you know, single draw or stud or what, Badoogie or whatever, just not allowed to spread it. And most of the places that I travel to, they might be permitted to play those games, but it's not like, you know, I'm going to go to play that Heartland Poker Tour event in St. Louis and be able to get a bunch of people who want to play, like, you know, 300, 600, you know, Badoogie, Omaha, Triple Draw, and, you know, Stud 8.
Greg, I have actually a question for you, and I feel like whether it's intentional or inadvertent, you're filling a very important role these days as kind of the ambassador for the everyman, to where you host these events in smaller casinos, or you go to the smaller poker tours like the Heartland, you do your training seminars. Is it is it kind of a conscious effort to do like a grassroots type of poker endorsement for these people, and just to kind of get out amongst the poker hopefuls instead of the poker superstars? Is that something conscious, or did it just kind of work out that way?
It really more just, I think, works out that way. I mean, it's not like, you know, I wouldn't talk to a casino and schedule a seminar at the same time as a, you know, circuit event or a WPT or anything like that. But for the most part, like, I don't schedule any of my seminars in, like, L.A., Vegas, or Atlantic City. And so some of the more major events, those are where those take place. And so, you know, I'll teach WSOP academies at some of those locations. But don't tend to do my own seminars at any, you know, I won't do my own seminars at any of those three locations. So I just end up frequently at other places, or like you say, you know, somewhat smaller venues, smaller tournaments, not ones where first prize is, you know, millions of dollars. So, I mean, here at the River, where first prize is going to be $651,000, so close enough to $1 million for most people to make them happy.
I don't think you're going to find too many people who don't like that much money. I just think it's whether it's just working, even though it's just working out that way, I think it's very important to kind of go to the roots of poker and try and get those people interested in the game. And someone like yourself has the ability to bring out, you know, the guys who aren't your online grinders and your, you know, live game grinders, and they're just, you know, casual players who just want to play with somebody and be in that environment in their local hometown. And I think it's a great service that you're doing that and you're there. I think it's something really commendable, even if it's not intentional. It's a very important role that you're doing, and I just wanted to, you know, commend you for it.
Thank you, I appreciate it. The real hard part is just convincing poker players that, you know, any kind of seminar, any kind of poker education would be useful. You're fighting the ego or the hubris. One of the most common compliments I receive at the end of any of the seminars I've ever taught is like, you know, wow, you know, I learned so much from you today, and I didn't think you were going to be able to teach me anything. And they don't mean like you, Greg Raymer. I didn't think you could teach me anything. They mean, I didn't think anyone could teach me anything because I thought I knew it all. And then they sit through the seminar and they're like, oh, reverse implied odds. It never even occurred to me. And, you know, other things that I bring up, and it's like, oh my God, this is all brand new. And so then afterwards, you know, they're like converts, you know, they're like, oh my, you know, now I realize how much it is I can learn. And, you know, even though I understand that mindset, it's always still surprising to me, because I mean, I mean it if I say, you know, I could walk into the poker room right now, we could find the worst player in the room, have them try to teach us a seminar on poker, I would learn something. I mean, I might not learn enough that it would be worth spending all day listening to the guy and paying him money, but I would learn something from even that person who is, you know, the least competent poker player in the room. So if you get someone who's actually a pretty good player, you know, let alone better than that, you ought to be able to learn a lot from them, no matter where your game is at. Whether you're a great player, a mediocre player, or a beginner, there should be a lot that you can learn from any good player. And so convincing people that, like, my seminar will be worth their time and money, is that's the hard part. Once they take it, then they're like, oh, yeah, I really want to do it again someday. But it is amazing kind of how that mindset goes. You know, people that hardly understand what pot odds means think they know it all already.
Yeah. Listen, I would in a heartbeat sit and pay whatever you want it to take in whatever you need, you got to say, because there's very... What's that?
I feel like I gave you enough money over the years, and we played a lot of No Limit in my younger days, that I might deserve like a free pass. But if you're ever in town, I definitely will be well worth it to pay the amount of admission to come in and listen to you speak.
Well, I'm talking to Foxwoods about trying to do a seminar there at some point. So
good luck with them. They're a little tough, I hear, getting some things done.
Well, but you know, I've got a long history with them, so. in that sense, it should be easier for me to work with them than the average person. But I know what you're talking about. Some organizations are tougher to work with than others. Like like the New Jersey Gaming Commission.
Well, Atlantic City finally passed draw games, so I mean, I guess that's a big benefit down there, at least.
Oh yeah, well, the Jersey Commission's always been tough, and you know, some of the tribal commissions are very tough to deal with. You know, Nevada actually is the easiest to deal with, despite them occasionally pooching some things. They're still easier to deal with, more open than others. And you know, they have a better grasp, I think, of what their job is. You know, their job is to promote the industry. So the only reason we're going to give someone a hard time is if they're asking us permission to do something that could somehow be damaging to the industry as a whole. And, you know, beyond that, they try to avoid holding the companies back. You know, like they're the company, let them kind of do what they want, as long as what they're doing isn't going to be dangerous to the industry. We don't want them to do something that could backfire and look bad and make people suspicious of casinos, make them not trust the casinos in general. So, and to me, that's what the commission's there for. It's there to make sure that the casinos are operating properly, treating the customers fairly, and, you know, the rules and regulations, the prohibitions that we're putting on the casinos are for the good of the entire industry. You know, despite the fact that maybe this casino thinks it's better for it to do something, maybe we'll say no when we think it's going to be bad for the entire casino industry.
And Greg, we've actually had a little discussion going amongst ourselves, and hopefully our other co-host, Brandon Garrison, can chime in on this. Maybe you
I'm
can.
Here.
Oh, are you good? Maybe you can settle a little bet we've had going on, and what your honest opinion is here.
Same bet, gentlemen.
Of course.
Okay, Johnny?
Booked.
Okay, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Brandon.
Greg, I'm going to ask you a question, and there really is no wrong answer, and no matter what, you know, we've had this running bet now for a number of hours, and we've asked various different people the question, and the proceeds all have been going to the 22Q Foundation. If you had to just name one player, okay, that comes to mind, if I asked you who is the biggest superstar in poker, who would you say?
The biggest superstar in poker?
Yep. It's just one name.
Well, to be honest, it's not going to be anyone you guys would have bet on.
That's fine.
That's fine.
I'll take a push.
Yep.
The big superstar in poker, and I'm not even sure, 100% sure of the answer, but it's going to be something, you know, like Matt Damon or someone like that, like a, you know, a Hollywood celebrity or an athlete celebrity who also plays a lot of poker. And I'm not sure he plays enough poker for him to maybe qualify. You know, okay. It would have been Ben Affleck like 10 years ago, but I haven't seen Ben starring in as many movies as he was at that time. You know, so that, I mean, that would to me be the correct answer. You know, and if you mean no, I don't mean a celebrity who happens to play poker, then I'm not sure. I mean, to be honest, we're not very big celebrities. You know, we're only celebrities to those people who
I guess what we're asking, Greg, is amongst the poker world.
Phrase it. Just in mainstream America, if you just polled everyone that's watched poker on TV, amongst obviously also people in the industry, if they were to come up with one name, if you just asked, you know, everyone in America who is the biggest poker star, what name do you think would be more popular than others? And if you can't answer it, that's fine.
No, then the answer, you know, in that sense is Chris Moneymaker.
Okay.
Okay, awesome.
That's a great answer.
Greg, in our chat right now is
who won the bet?
Nobody. It's a push. We've got.
I'll leave it to you. we you know, I said just most Americans in general, and you know, a lot of it meaning just people that are casual poker players or people that watch television. I thought the name Phil Ivey would be just the name that most people would state. And my two other hosts said Daniel Negreanu, and we called a number of poker rooms actually throughout the United States, and we you know, we were betting on this, and each time one of us was correct, we're donating money to the 22Q Foundation. And from what we've gotten, you know, so far, we got a couple of odd answers, but just in general, Ivy was leading 3-1, and it's actually funny.
Two to one.
Was it 2-1? No, 3-1.
2-1.
I'm sorry, 2-1.
Okay. I would thought Andy Duke could be in there a lot when you're talking to people who are not like diehard poker players, but who watch it a little bit on TV, because then they've also seen her. You know, she's done several game shows and the Apprentice, Celebrity Apprentice thing. So I would have thought her name would be coming up pretty often. And then if you don't limit it to America, and especially if you kind of weight it, then like Joe Hashem might be number one, because, you know, he's somewhat known in this country, but he's like massive in Australia. I mean, he is one of the most well-known, recognizable celebrities of any category in Australia. Hmm. So it's kind of like he would crush Australia so much more than anyone you would pick would dominate the same test in America. But if you're doing it worldwide, he might win for that reason.
It's a very good point. Never really thought of that.
Greg, you know, just...
Like his score in the U.S. wouldn't be number one or even close to it, but his score in Australia would be number one by...
A much larger,
by like 100-fold over number two.
Sure.
You know, something like that. So it would be like such a massive win in Australia that he'd have so many points that he might win the international competition.
Greg, last thing really quick. We appreciate you spending time out and talking to us. It's been really gracious of you. A couple of the users in our chat just want us to say hello to you. One is Victor Ramden and Sir Bobby Orr.
Great guys.
They just wanted me to say hello on their behalf to you. So hello from those guys.
Well, and back to them. I hope that they're probably listening then if they're in your chat.
Yeah, right. Victor was our first guest on the show 20 hours ago, and he's listened, I think, to the whole thing.
Wow.
He's playing the Coupe right now.
I know he could be a degenerate, but not for, like, poker radio.
Yeah, well, they're playing the Coupe up in Toronto, and they're just grinding and listening, so...
I see, okay. Yeah, I don't play any online poker anymore, because I certainly wasn't planning on setting up an address overseas, so to speak.
Sure, sure.
You know, forgive me, Greg, if this was addressed, I just had to take a quick break. Like, as Johnny and Kevin mentioned, we've been on the air now 21 and a half hours straight. I know after you won the main event, I played with you pretty often for a couple years at the Bellagio in 3060 Limit Hold'em, and I really don't play there that much anymore. And I just wonder what games are you playing these days when you play live?
I don't really get the opportunity to play much live. Like here at Windstar, I've been playing all PLO for the cash games. Some PLO 8, they'll do like a mixed game here where each orbit is high and high-low, Hot Limit Omaha. But you know, I've been playing anywhere from 1-2 mixed up to 25-50 PLO.
How often would you say you play these days? Or cash games anyhow?
You know, not a lot. I mean, in many cases, you know, I'm somewhere to, like, teach a seminar, play the tournament, you know, and then I'm going home. So even if I end up having, like, a day or so of free time, you know, more often than not, the cash games are pretty much just hold'em, and I really am not that interested in hold'em anymore. I'm much more interested in the other games. When I can, I will do a dealer's choice game, which I've done on several occasions now at various venues when I've been there to teach and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'll just play, you know, a low stakes dealer's choice, and when it's your turn to pick the game, we play it for a full orbit, and you pick any game that the casino's allowed to spread. And, you know, so we're playing everything. We're playing No Limit Single Draw and Badoosi and, you know, Stud High Low No Qualifier, right? Even learned a great game in Florida, which, you know, I'd love to share with everyone. It's called Sveten. Sveten, S-V-E-T-I-N. It's a Scandinavian home game. The guy, he called that when we were down in Florida. Probably a little bit of a loose interpretation by the floor man, because he told me the game, and I said, I'd love to play it. I'm sure it's not on the list of games. we explained it to the floor man. It's kind of a combination of five-card draw and five-card PLO. And the floor man said, well, you're allowed to play PLO and you're allowed to play draw, so why not? And we played it. And then I played it again at the Rio in a cash game this summer during the World Series. But it is five-card PLO, which anyone who's played PLO will know immediately what I mean. So just like other ordinary PLO, you use at showdown, it's two from your hand and three from the board. High hand wins. But the variation in this game is that when you deal the flop and finish the flop betting, the dealer does not then put out the turn right away. The dealer then goes around from early to late position, and each player indicates how many cards they wish to draw. And you, just like in a triple draw game or a Bedouin game, you know, you, like, you know, I'll say two cards, and I put my two discards forward, separate from the ones I'm keeping. Everyone indicates their draw in turn. The dealer then burns, gives everyone their new cards, and immediately deals the turn card on the board. You then finish the hand, just like PLO, with, you know, you bet now, you bet again after the river card is dealt. But at showdown, half the pot goes to the best PLO hand, half the pot goes to the best five-card draw high hand.
Wow. I could see that actually catching on.
It was a great game. We were playing pot limit triple draw at the World Series, and I was telling these guys about this game, and they were, like, a little bit intrigued, but, like, didn't necessarily want to play. We were down to four-handed, and I said, look, let's play one orbit. Give me four hands of sweep. If you guys don't love it, you know, we'll stop playing it and I'll never mention it again. Played it for 3.5 hours straight. After that fourth hand, no one even suggested going back to triple draw. And it was a great game. Even the guy who got, one guy got felted like 6 times and he still loved the game. You know, and he still does today. In fact, he was here at Winstar, you know, saying, you know, it was like their favorite game to play, and they play like a little private home game. This group of guys all like live in Vegas, you know, they're like former online grinders that now play live for a living. And he's like, you know, we play a little home game, you know, where we live in Vegas, and that's our favorite game in the home game. It's sweet. And it was a really fun game. I had like the sick hand of the night. You know, I started with two aces, which is always a good PLO hand. I raised, got like three callers. We put out the flop. It was ace, eight, six, rainbow. So I have top set. I bet, two of them call. Now for the draw, I keep my aces and draw three cards. I don't remember how my opponents drew. But the dealer then gives me three kings in my hand and then pairs the board for the turn card in the PLO. So now I've got kings full of aces in my hand and aces full of kings. I mean, aces full of eights on the PLO hand. So that was pretty much a lock scoop hand. I mean, I could have lost a quad on the PLO, but not very likely. And a full house and five card single draw is a pretty big hand. So that was the, like, sick cooler hand of the night for me to make something that huge.
Wow. And where is this in Florida that you're playing this at? What casino?
I think this was at the Daytona Beach Kennel Club, I think. Pretty sure that's right, but I'm not 100%. But, I mean, it was just, we were just playing $1, $2 dealer's choice. So if you picked a pot limiter or no limit game, it was $1 and $2 blinds. If you picked a limit game, it was like 2 and 4 blinds, 4 and 8 limits. And so, you know, play, you know, one orbit of Raz, and then play one orbit of Sveten, and then play, you know, one orbit of Badoogie, and then play an orbit of, you know, Crazy Pineapple. Just any game they were allowed to deal. So I like to do that when I get the opportunity at locations. I mean, I'll definitely be doing that in Colorado if I have time and we're allowed to.
Very good stuff. Greg, I don't know if it was mentioned by either of my hosts. We have a interactive chat that goes on that's participating, yep. Obviously. And one of the questions that just came in, and I just, you know, I just want to ask you is, one of our users wanted me to ask, what are your feelings about Daniel Negreanu in regards to his outspoken ways?
Well, I mean, he just always says what he thinks, and sometimes he puts his foot in his mouth. But that's going to be true of anyone who shares all of their thoughts and opinions on everything.
Mm, all right. Do you have a friendship with Negreanu, or are you particularly close, or?
No, we don't really get along very well.
Okay. Johnny, Kevin, anything else you guys have?
I think that just about does it. Greg, you actually, I feel like I've been educated. I feel like I just sat through a mini workshop on the inner workings of card games and legislation. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge with us.
Oh, my pleasure. I mean, the only thing I'll add is to tell everyone listening to please, go to theppa.org. That's thepppa.org. And, find out what we're doing for you. And if you're not already, please join up, become a member. Because, to be honest, we need those, it's like $20, $25 membership fee. We need that money because, we spend a lot. We pay lobbyists to, help us with Congress and try to get legislation passed. Like this case in New York, we were, instrumental in helping this guy win his case and get Judge Weinstein to write that opinion. But it takes money to pay the salaries of the PPA employees, the guys like John Pappas that are full-time employees. It takes money to pay the lobbyists and to cover expenses and everything else. So, we need help with that. And we need the poker players also to help us, in a non-monetary fashion. If you find the Rich Muni's daily action plan, please do it. If every poker player out there who wanted online poker back in America, if they would follow Rich Muni's daily action plan, we would win in no time.
All right, you heard it, man. Go get out there and get stuff going.
Just out of curiosity, since you're mentioning the PPA, and what is their relationship, their working relationship, I should add, with 2+2? And the only reason why I ask you this is, it was obviously, made a lot of news, at least on the forums and on the internet, Mason Malamud's view and things that occurred a while back. And he recently wrote a post stating that 2+2, and I guess he was obviously speaking on behalf of 2+2, and the PPA have been working together and getting along much better. And I guess to paraphrase him, seeing eye to eye now more than they had in the past. Would you characterize that as being accurate?
Yeah, it probably is. I mean, I know when the PPA first came along, and one of the things they had done was, they asked, people like Mason and 2+2 and other important poker websites, would you please, help us? We're trying to reach out to all the poker players. We want to help them help themselves and get what they want, from a, legal, political point of view. And I think Mason's initial concern was justified of, well, I haven't heard of you, you're brand new. How do I know this isn't just a scam to, steal money from poker players? And I think what happened really is, like, the original people who ran the PPA on day one possibly didn't do a good enough job, kind of convincing him. In other words, they might have, like, oh, come on, like, we know we're legitimate, so what the hell are you talking about, kind of a thing. It's one of those things, if you really are a con man, you understand what this person is getting at, and you're probably prepared to give them the kind of information they need to feel more comfortable. But when you're not a con man and you had no such thought in mind, you're just kind of like, God, we're trying to get so much done, we're so busy, and we're underfunded, and I really don't have time for this bullshit, it's like, why won't you just believe me? And so there might have been some of that going on. I'm not really sure. I wasn't on the board at that time. But I know, like, at the very beginning, he kind of was like, hey, I'm suspicious of this PPA. I don't trust them. And then after a few years, then he finally came around and was like, okay, yeah, these really are the good guys, and they're trying to, what they're doing is good for poker and good for players. And, now 2+2 is happy to help them, and give them some banner space on the site and encourage 2+2 members to participate and help. And that's one of the places you can go now to find the daily action plan. If you go to any of, like, the major forums on 2+2, usually right there in the forum is a thread where, Rich is updating it every day with his action plan. And all the action plan is it's really just click on some links to do things like generate an email to your member of Congress, you know, your senators, your representative, or possibly sending things to the DOJ, to Obama, to your state politicians in some cases. Maybe not your politicians, but maybe let's generate, you know, some communications to every member of this committee because there's about to be a meeting on a poker-related piece of legislation. So what people do is they just go to the Daily Action Plan page, and it'll basically explain, like, click, you know, here, 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 and here, and you can either, like, maybe it's generate an email, maybe it's generate a tweet, maybe it's to generate a Facebook posting on that politician's Facebook page. But it literally is something where you're going to do something like click the button, the link. It's going to pull up a new tab, you know, on your browser because you've already logged into Twitter, and here's a pre-filled tweet. Now you just click the send button, and you've tweeted to Congressman A. And now you close that tab. And then you click on the second button on the Daily Action Plan, and a tab opens up, and here's a pre-filled tweet to Congressman B. And it's like click, 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 you know, like six members of that committee. You click your mouse 18 times. You're done in, you know, 20 to 60 seconds. And you've sent out six tweets directed at these members of Congress on this committee. That might be the entirety of the action plan for the day. In like 1 minute of your time. But then these guys, these politicians, they see this stuff on their Facebook page, you know, on the Twitter feed for their at mentions. You know, they're getting emails sent to their, you know, office in Congress. They monitor this stuff. They pay attention to this stuff. When our lobbyists go in to talk to these people now face to face, they hear from them things like, you know, like, man, I got like, you know, 500 tweets, you know, or 500, you know, you guys swamped my Facebook page with your stuff. And that's when right now the Daily Action Plan is only getting like, a, you know, like 400 or 500, maybe 1,000 or a little bit more people a day.
Right.
There's millions of poker players who want online poker. So if we could, you know, instead of getting 1,000 a day, if we could get 100,000 a day, which I don't think is too much to ask for, these guys would go batshit crazy trying to give us what we wanted. They'd be like, oh my God, this is like worse than like, you know, what's that, AARP, you know, it's like those AARP guys driving me crazy.
Absolutely.
You know, every retired guy in my district is screaming at me about Social Security and how, you know, they're going to vote me out of office if I don't help them. And it's like, you guys are like, you know, there's 100 times as many of you, like, screaming at me about online poker. And it's like, man, that doesn't even, that's like going to bring in tax dollars instead of spend them. So, you know, yeah, so I will now, like, shit my pants trying to give you what you want.
Well, Greg, thank you so much for everything you've given us tonight. And, it's all for the kids, obviously, and we're trying to raise awareness, like we said previously, for 22Q. You've been so, so informative, and I feel like we've just learned so much, and we have so much knowledge going forward from this. If you make it up to Foxwoods, please tweet at us or give us some information on the site, and you always have an open invitation anytime you have anything to talk about if you want to come back, and we just really appreciate you being with us.
My pleasure, and good luck with your marathon, and thanks for your hard work staying up for the kids, and wish you the best.
Thank you so much, Greg.
Thank you very much, Greg.